You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Eye on the Ball. I'm Steve Rivera, and you're listening to 1030 The Voice. Welcome to Monday, the first day of the week as it pertains to this show. Lots to talk about. Either you're a big UA fan or you're not a big UA fan. It's kind of no in between because football is not good. Basketball is, well, kind of very good. In fact, I see a thumbs up on the other side of the screen. Front runner. Welcome to the show, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself today?
I'm fine, thank you. I need a little pick-me-up. I need to find a soda or something.
I'm more of a coffee guy.
Are you? I'm not a coffee guy.
Oh, I am 100% a coffee guy.
I don't like the taste. What's up with the taste?
So, funny story for you, Steve. I think like most coffee addicts, I started with a little coffee with my cream and sugar, and then eventually I got to a point where now I just drink it black.
Wow.
It's an acquired taste.
I was going to say, how long was that transition?
Years. I mean, I was heavy on the sugar.
Oh, that's what I am. If I stop at like at a you know, McDonald's or whatchamacallit, it's like 20 cups of sugars and just I can't taste it. I just hate the taste.
So my conversion story is one day I started doing a low carb diet for the first time, and you can't really have, you know, sugar and creamer or whatever. So I just said, you know what? I love coffee. I'm going to learn to drink it black. And probably the first 5 to 10 cups, I was a miserable human being. But all of a sudden on cup 11, my body went, ooh, this is kind of good.
Really?
Yeah, it's weird. Your mind just adjusts, and all of a sudden you begin to crave it. It's strange.
So all that caffeine didn't make you a miserable human being? Or just a frantic, miserable human being?
No, the caffeine prevents me from being a miserable human being. It really sweetens my disposition.
Oh, okay.
Even without sugar.
Are you on coffee now?
I am, actually. I've got some
Okay, good. Yeah. Drink that coffee, buddy.
I'll keep it going. Just for you.
So a lot of people must have been on coffee Saturday night, deep into the night, or whatever they were drinking, because you need a lot of drinking to put up with the football program getting their butt kicked.
Yeah, and look, I will say this. I support the football program no matter what. I know that.
Good for you.
They've got number 7 Utah coming in this weekend. I still want to go to the game. I love going to the games. I really enjoy
You're that
it.
One guy.
I just hate the parking tickets.
What do you mean?
Oh, my goodness. I've gotten, I don't know. I think I've gone to...
Oh, could you park in the neighborhoods?
Yeah. So I try to figure out the street signs and everything and whatever. And it's just... That is the one thing, whenever somebody says, well, we need more people to come down here to the games, make it easier to park and get to the game, and I bet you a lot more people
show
up.
So how much are you paying for the parking tickets?
$30? At least. One of them was even more than that.
Why don't you just pay like those 10 buck places where the kids do their fraternity stuff?
I don't get there early enough usually.
Oh, okay.
Most of the time they're already clogged up by then. I'm one of those people who always has the best intentions of leaving early, and then I'm walking in the middle of the first quarter.
So you must be an ex-media guy who has a pass, but now you don't longer have a pass.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
deny.
Right. And the C parts for you is every now and again, right? Because you're a former media guy.
Yeah, sometimes it works.
Yeah, sometimes it works.
Rarely.
Never works for me. So they got they tried hard. I don't know. I can't even say they. I thought that they would not cover, and they didn't by half a point. But Oregon is okay. It's not that great. It's missing a kicker. They missed an extra point and an easy field goal. So they'll have issues down the road if they expect to win the Pac-12 title and move on to the top 4 teams. I don't think that's going to happen. In fact, I think they'll probably get beat by Utah. In a couple, 3 weeks when they play in the Pac-12 championship. We'll see what happens with that. But they are talented. There's no question about that. And as we all know, that Arizona has a lot of growing to do. He has a quarterback problem. There's no question that someone has a quarterback problem. I'm not too sure why he doesn't just go with Gunnell the rest of the way. There's no more experimenting with Khalil Tate. I just don't see it. I'm not the guy making $2.5 million.
Well, that's true. But also, I mean, at this point, don't you want to kind of flip the keys to the kids and see what they've got?
Yeah. I agree with you. Yeah. Either they have it or they don't. And at least it gives you some experience for next year. You think. Do you believe in that?
Oh, I do. Absolutely. I sure do.
Why?
I think that because you just can't replicate games with practice.
That's true. I agree there.
100%. I don't care how hard you practice, and you should practice hard, but you cannot replicate a game situation because something, especially when it's your own team, you're not going to deliver that hit. You're not going to pressure that guy as hard, whether it's in the front of your mind or not. I mean, you're just not facing the fear of taking a lick if you're a quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just not moving as fast.
Yeah, and I think that's what Khalil Tate suffered from. He got hit maybe a year or two ago, and guess what he decided? I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to get hit anymore. I shouldn't say I want to be a quarterback. He got hit, and then it's kind of been shy since. I know you weren't here when we talked about it last week. He, you know his history, right? You know his history.
Yeah.
Had this fantastic October 2 years ago. He hasn't duplicated that at all. He's had a spotty game or two or a good game every now and again. More not than yes. And everyone's still holding out hope. It's too late now.
Steve, do you think part of it is that they tried to convert him into a more quote-unquote traditional type of quarterback?
Yeah, well, it depends who you ask. And if you're asking me, I don't think that they try to do that. I think he tried to do that. So I think and we talked about this Friday, that he's to blame for his circumstances in as much as he wanted to prove to people at the next level that he could throw the ball and become more of a traditional quarterback. And guess what happened?
Didn't work so well.
And now when you've been exposed to not being able to do it, you're in trouble. And that's what happened.
Well, to your point, I really think it is time to look at next year and see what you have. And I like Canal. I like what I've seen from him so far.
Well, and what do you have to lose other than the games you've already lost?
Right. Especially against a high-ranked opponent. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want a great learning curve, that's it.
Right. No, to your point, yeah, you get experience against that team. And, you know, I think you can always put him in. You can put Khalil. But you've given a chance and a chance and a chance, and it just hasn't worked out. And granted, it was against some quality teams. That said, we knew this was going to happen. Those who are realistic knew that this was going to happen. And here we are, just not playing very well. Sorry to say. So we'll see. We'll see what happens down the road. They have, Utah, and then, of course, ASU, and then that's the season. It went by pretty quickly. I'm not going to probably go to this weekend's game for a couple of reasons. Too busy on the weekend doing other things, but we'll see what happens. I don't know what the spread is. It's too early for me to even look, but I would assume that Utah's at least probably an 18, 19-point favorite going into a big game for them because they got to keep winning for the Pac-12. Are we ready to go to a break? We can do that.
We're creeping up on it, if that's where you'd like to go.
Did we have a caller? Is the caller...
That was Gloria, and she will call back at the bottom of the hour.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, let's take a break here. Maybe we have Ryan Hansen calling in here about 6:15, 6:16. Thanks a bunch, Tom. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 10:30 The Voice. Now on the phone, we have Ryan Hansen. Ryan, good to talk to you. You there, Ryan?
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Good to talk to you. I haven't talked to you in a while about the Cats. I really like this team. I don't know about you.
I'll tell you what, they are definitely an exciting team to watch. The energy and the camaraderie and chemistry that they have this early in the season, it's kind of infectious as a fan, and I think the Wildcat faithful here have been longing for a good, talented, competitive, fun team to watch, and they are all of that.
I think that it might have brought a tear to your eye or two, reminiscing of a little of Lute Olson's teams where they like to run and stun and try to get out in the court. I said that to Sean, and he says, what are you asking me, that you wanted me to run? This is, I've been waiting for 10 years.
Yeah, it does help when you have players that suits their talent level and their skill level, that it's clearly given Sean the confidence to push the ball. And it is when Nico Mannion is at his best, is when he is pursuing the rim as hard as possible. He's got his eyes up, he's seeing the floor, and it helps when he has the ability to finish. You know, some of the pass guards that we've had have been more distributors last year. No offense to Justin Coleman, but more of a facilitator. Had his moments, right, scoring, winning some games for us, but night in and night out, not going to be the threat that Nico is. And the tempo makes for fun basketball to watch, to your point.
You know, we're always these people that like to reminisce and say, this guy reminds me of this guy, this guy reminds me of this guy. It's just what we do, and we're always messing it up. But to me, I think he looks or plays a little like Mike Bibby, controlled, kind of knows the game. You could tell he has that IQ, knows when to push, knows when not to. Would you agree?
I would, and this is probably, you've hit the main points, right? He has the ability to impact the game when he's not scoring, but he has the uncanny ability to take over a game from the scoring standpoint. He hasn't had to do that. Maybe, though, in the Illinois game, I thought the team got off to a little rocky start, and he was the guy that set the tone and got everybody under control. Nico can score at all three levels. That's a basketball term that maybe not everybody understands. Obviously, the three levels. Has the ability to hit the three-point shot, can stop and pop at 15 feet, and he can finish at the rim. And that makes him so dangerous. And when you put he and Zeke Nagy in a pick-and-roll opportunity, there may not be a better two-man game in the Pac-12 if you isolate them on one side of the floor because of each of their individual abilities to impact the play and finish at the rim or beyond.
I know they've only played four games, or it's still too early to tell how good they're going to be, but they're probably they're better than what I thought they would be. They look good. They're having fun. They're playing. Sean is doing exactly what he used to. Let him play. What do you think? Are they playing better than what you thought? Where do you have them at?
I agree with you, Steve. You know, you and I guess, have been around to the program for close to 30 years now individually. So when you look back, some people have asked me, are these guys Arizona good, in quotes? And I would absolutely think and be confident in saying that Nico, Josh, and Zeke, in particular, those three, the freshman class, Christian Coloco as well, but the three we've seen the most of, could play on any team in the modern era, Lute Olson or Sean Miller, it doesn't matter. These three guys are talented enough. They have the physical tools to play, and you can project in probably all three cases, these guys will play in the NBA at some level, and so you couldn't say that about every single recruit under Sean Miller or even every single recruit under Lute Olson had the ceiling of the NBA. And these three, they absolutely, unequivocally will play in the NBA. Now, will they play, be in the 2020 NBA draft after four games? Too small of a sample size. I think everybody sees, though, the upside on all three.
Sean, who sees him every day, says that he thinks Green reminds him of Mr. Johnson, Nick Johnson from a few years ago. Who does he remind you of?
Well, I don't want to take the easy answer, but I think Sean is right on point. He's a bigger Nick Johnson in my realm. I think I think the reasons you see that, obviously there's clearly physical characteristics, strong lower body, commits to defense. Nick Johnson picked up on those concepts early, might have been our best perimeter defender the year he was the Pac-12 player of the year. He may have been our best perimeter defender. Explosive at the rim. Josh has those skills as well. What makes Josh and Nick similar is their high IQ. They see the floor well offensively. They understand defensive concepts. So that's probably my closest connection from a past Arizona player. I got to go with what Sean's saying with him.
I don't disagree with how he looks. I have another guy that you may or may not agree with.
Yeah.
But Richard Jefferson, athletic, can defend, has a jumper, but is inconsistent right now. The one thing that Richard didn't have at this level was that jumper that was dead eye and could, you know, you'd kind of want him to play rather than shoot. Right now, I think that Green is that guy because you think when he shoots, okay, good shot, and it goes in. Or sometimes, good, what are you doing? But to me, that's that guy because he's a lanky 6'6", 6'7", right?
I kind of like the comparison there with Richard as well. And to your point, inconsistent jumper at this stage of his career, but has the ability to go 4-for-7 for against Illinois like he did. That was very much like Richard. The one knock I would say on Josh that you could probably tie him close to Richard on this one is at this stage of their career when they drive the ball to the rim, Josh loves to take off a 1 foot or kind of float through the air instead of stopping and popping. And Richard developed that as a junior. Now think of this. That's in his third year, Richard picked up that ability to stop at 15 and just elevate over the top of his defender and knock the shot down consistently. I don't think you're far off by comparing him to Richard. Size-wise, he's probably right in between Richard and Nick Johnson. I don't think he's as tall as Richard, but he's definitely taller than Nick Johnson.
Yeah, and I think in time, when he starts to work on that jumper, be more consistent with it, he's going to be fantastic.
No, I couldn't agree more. And that's the thing, you kind of want to slow down and breathe. I don't know if you have been watching, and you and I look at all of the different articles and quote-unquote experts in this field. And I saw Jeff Goodman, a former ESPN guy and a U of A alum, has come out, and I think he put Arizona in his top five. I think he had Arizona at fifth this week. That's my one caution to
yes,
the fans.
I agree.
Be excited. This is a better team than what we thought. Could this be a special team? I think it could be. They've got the pieces. They've got the depth. They have the centerpiece in Zeke Nagy. They've got the talent. But they've got such a long way to go. It is such a long season. And at 4-0, when everything's going great, you look at the four opponents, nobody would say any of them were
right.
world beaters.
Right.
In fact, in their current state, none of them are even NCAA tournament teams. New Mexico State may become one when they get their injured players back. Illinois might play themselves into one. But I would say right now, none of these four are even NCAA tournament teams at any level. So to get too carried away and put Arizona in the top five, I think is a bit much to start. That's my one caution of even, you know, comparing. And it's fun for you and me, and that's what's great about being, you know, in the media and on the radio and talking to fans, is we can do this. But it sometimes leads to, oh, I remember Richard as a junior when mm-hmm. we went to the Final Four in 2001. Well, we're comparing Richard and Josh
right.
as freshmen.
Right.
Right? So still a ways to go there. But nonetheless, the talent level and the excitement is there. And there's, I think what people are most excited is beyond this freshman class. When you sprinkle in the other players that, dare I call them role players, almost unfair to use that term for Jamal Baker and Max Hazard at this point. Those guys, you know, these are high-level recruits in Jamal Baker, a player in Max Hazard who started every game last year. Those two guys may actually be the X factor of this. If this team does something, it may not be on the shoulders of Zeke, Nico, and Josh. It may be on the shoulders of Max, Chase Jeter, and Jamal Baker.
Right, right. To your point about comparing the teams and moving them in the top five or whatever, I think you're around 1999, 2000. Arizona goes to the New York, to the Madison Square Garden, I think it was, or maybe one of those early tournaments. They're not ranked.
Yep.
They're not ranked very high. They of course, worked that magic in November, what Lute always did, and then they end up at the top 10, and people are going giddy. And you're right. It's way too early to get giddy.
Yep, it was the 2000 year. It was the preseason NIT. Jason Gardner, Gilbert Arenas, starting backcourt were two freshmen. We all could see what was going on. And then when they hit Madison Square Garden, the big stage, bright lights, those two guys went crazy. Gilbert went off, and that was when the excitement got maybe a little too high. Some injuries, et cetera. We didn't have a great finish in the NCAA tournament because we weren't exactly healthy. Richard out, Lauren back surgery, et cetera. But to your point, got really pumped up on this team early in 2000. I would say be excited. Enjoy the ride with this team. Don't write the script in March just
right.
yet.
Very, I like that. That's very good. And I asked Sean yesterday already, the best shooting team. I think this is the best shooting team he's had, or he has.
I think you may be right. And when you, I dare say, it isn't that hard to pick that out. I think I don't want to discredit your ability to ask the question. And I didn't even know you asked it, but I could have guessed that was you in the press conference that asked that question. When you compare back, Sean Miller has really not had good shooting teams, really and truly. When you look at the win players of Arizona's best teams under Sean Miller, Stanley Johnson, Aaron Gordon, Nick Johnson, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson in that two-year run, well, I wouldn't put any four of those guys and label them as a great shooter in any one of them.
Right.
You know, they had other unbelievable skills and talents and intangibles that made Arizona who they were, more of a defensive team, a rebounding team, a team that could finish at the rim. Oh, yeah, and they could shoot a little bit, too. This team may be, you know, flip the script. This team might have the ability to knock down perimeter shots more consistently. At least there's definitely more shooters available when you add in a Stone Gettings to the guys I already mentioned.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And Dylan Smith, you know, something I've been talking to coworkers here is thinking through what Dylan Smith can be for this team. And I think if Dylan understands he does not need to get 10 shots a game, that the more success this team gets, the more eyeballs fall on him for a potential pro career overseas. So he doesn't have to be the man. He can take wide open shots and shoot an extremely high percentage. He doesn't need to make tough shots. He needs to make open shots. And if he can think that through, this team, that's when they become special, is when guys like that understand, I don't have to make the great pass. I'm going to make the open pass because there's somebody else just as good as me, or even better in many cases, that has an opportunity to finish. Unlike last year, where a lot was riding on Dylan. You had to have him score 10 a game for you to be in the game.
Yeah.
This year, don't need it. Knock down open shots, not tough ones.
Do you have time to stick around after the break?
Sure.
Let's talk more. Let's talk more here on the break, here on 1030 The Voice. Hey, welcome back. I'm Steve Rivera here on AM 1030 The Voice. I'm talking to Mr. Ryan. How you doing, Ryan? One more thing. Mr. Ryan Hansen, I should say. One more thing, one comparison. I want to go back into the good old days when we used to have fun as we were younger men. So Zeke Nnaji, who does he remind you of? Because I think he's a variety of guys, not just one.
That's a really tough call. His ability to finish around the rim, while it is above the rim, I kind of like Michael Wright comparison.
Mm-hmm.
I think his body type may not be exactly strong. He's got a great lower base, and he just finishes at the rim. And Michael was deceptively good at that, even though it wasn't above the rim a lot. And, you know, Michael had a pretty sweet jumper to 15 feet, as does Zeke. Different, because Michael was a lefty, and it was more of a set shot than what Zeke
Let me interrupt real quick, though.
Who do you got?
I'm sure there's more there, but let me just, because you brought this point up. So is he like Mike, where if Mike gets the ball, guess what? You ain't getting it back.
Oh, it's not coming out of the black hole. You know, I don't think it's as bad as Michael Wright was. And by the way, Mike shot it so well, you didn't mind.
That's true. That's true. Out,
but I think Mike, in his 3 years, he might have had 6 assists in 3 years.
You're right. No, I think I was going to say 5. Yeah. You might be a little gracious. Very true. Very true. Okay. So your guy, Michael Wright, it has to be more than that.
Well, I mean, I could see he doesn't have the supreme jumping ability of Pete Williams, but he impacts the game like Pete Williams did.
Yeah.
Just he's a little bigger than Pete. You know, Pete was 6'7", but I like looking at his body. That's what it reminds me of. And his, you know, he had a couple grown man rebounds against New Mexico State that he just went up against three guys, and it was his, and you just had to get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you like? Who do you like?
Now, so I wrote when I wrote this a couple weeks ago or last week. I think he reminds me of Donnell because of the hair, and he's the tall, thinner guy. Because of the hair, obviously Sean thinks it's the Williams, but Donnell, who did I say? Oh, Pinder, because of his athletic ability, a way to move around, but there was obviously somebody very good, and I can't remember, I'm getting too old, Ryan, for this, but there was another guy, I can't remember who it was, who he was just fantastic. It'll come to me too, but I do like your Pete Williams, because he's around the basket. The one thing I noticed last night, and I don't know if you did, just his energy in terms of enthusiasm. Every time he had one of those plays, he was fist pumping and going crazy with his enthusiasm, and I like that.
I do too, and I think that would be completely different than Michael Wright. Back to the point on throwing it into him, you didn't know if he dunked it on somebody or missed the layup. His facial expression, and you know, never changed. He just went to work.
Yeah.
But Zeke's activity, and to your point, it's the emotion, it's the energy, it's the worker's mentality. It's giving Sean Miller the ability to do some things differently on the defensive end that you're seeing now. How Arizona's defending ball screen action, they're sprinkling in some double teams. How Arizona's handling out-of-bounds plays under their own basket, slightly different, a little more aggressive, getting out in passing lanes. And it helps when you have a rim protector and an active guy back on the back line of your defense like Zeke Nagy. That gives you the ability to do some different things.
I remember now, Jordan Hill. So a combination of Jordan Hill. Jordan Hill, Donnell because of the hair, and then Pinder because maybe some athletic ability. He's got more athletic ability, but
I'm
able to
only gonna Donnell only because of the
only
hair.
Because no, there's no other reason but the hair.
that's right.
But you know, kind of Jordan Hill. Although Jordan Hill was very raw when he was coming into the game, and obviously he had a nice career. But those three, a combination of those three. There's probably more there, but you know, it's funny to me because Sean kind of raises the bar on himself, and it's hard to raise the bar. So 3 years ago, he has Markkanen, a guy that Arizona had never had a guy like that before.
Right.
I could be wrong. Then he follows that up with Aiden, a guy he's never had before anything like that here in this program. And then now he has this guy, Zeke Nagy, who kind of flew under the radar for whatever reason. The media's not that bright. And he has this guy. So three straight guys that have been, you go, wow.
Super unique, and that's what's interesting is Markkanen overseas, to your point, so he was not as well known coming from Finland. DeAndre Ayton on everybody's radar, everyone and their brother knew this guy was something special. Zeke Nagy, right here in the Midwest, in Minnesota, how in the world is he not playing for Michigan State?
No, I totally agree with you. I think I lost you. Did I lose
like
you?
He would be a perfect Michigan State type player. But Sean's ability to recognize up talent, I think Zeke came on the scene late into his junior year and his summer into his senior year, and Sean found him, and he is special. He is unique. I like how you put that.
Yeah. Let's finish with this. That's it for this team. I saw Andre, obviously, yesterday. You probably saw him, talk to him.
Yes.
Were you surprised? No, you're probably not surprised. He, of his career, and I'm going to give you some names. Who's most surprised? Andre's lasting that long. Channing lasting as long as he did. Richard lasting as long as he did. JT conquering all for like 20,000 years. I mean, who surprised you more in that beyond Arizona career?
In the longevity category, it has to still stay with Jason Terry. And I think you and I have talked about this. I remember him being a good recruit for Arizona, not a five-star recruit. So for him as a freshman to average 8 minutes a game and really in the NCAA tournament,
impact.
It was a fall. You didn't want him on the floor as a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, he changed that. And so for him to be in the league as long as he was, the longest of any Arizona player ever, that still blows my mind. Andre, you know what, he had some unique skill sets, and we saw it early at Arizona, right? Long, great wingspan, unbelievable athlete. His IQ off the charts, maybe almost to his detriment.
Yes, yes.
His IQ was so high.
No question. That was one of my things with him. You walk into a room, and he was the smartest guy in the room because he would let you know.
Oh, he would let you know. And you know what? He probably was, and it's not just in basketball, right?
Right.
And that's proven out with his book and some other things. The other thing I think that separates Andre from many of these guys, gym rat. He and Hassan Adams, and you remember this, came into the program at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Very similarly ranked. Hassan probably had more flash because of his highlight tapes. This was back when early dunk, high school dunk tapes were a thing in the early 2000s. So I think Hassan maybe had a little more hype around him. Hassan was not a gym rat like Andre.
Right.
Andre lives, eats, and breathes basketball. Gym rat, film guy, breakdown players, understood the game and wanted to learn. Just a sponge, always in the coaches' offices. So when practice was over, he was still hanging around. In the middle of the day, guys were back in their dorm sleeping. He was up in the coach's office, just around, listening, learning by practically osmosis. So from that standpoint, he was different. He was different in all the other areas, but that, I think, really has helped him be who he is, an NBA champion, a finals MVP, and still still in the NBA. He's not playing right now, but he will play. Good heavens! When I got the bro hug when I saw him at practice actually on Saturday, and it was like, this guy's probably 2% body fat, which is pretty amazing.
Right. So let me ask you this question to put you to the test. When he was a sophomore and Luke was a senior, I think it was, Luke said that had he stayed or he was going to stay for the 4 years, he would be the Arizona's all-time best player. So since then, there have been a lot of players come through. Bibby, Ayton, Markkanen, Gordon, Stanley. Who would have been the all-time best player had they stuck around?
Wow.
Take your time. I have no answer. I have no answer.
Yeah, I would have a hard time going away. Again, different era, and that's what's a little unique in this is the different era from, like, let's say, a Lowry Markkanen to an Andre Iguodala. But if I looked at what Lowry's capabilities were and what he's doing right now, so, like, what would Lowry be a senior this year? Do I have that right?
I think, would he be gone by now? This is his third year, isn't it?
Yeah, third year. So he was a freshman. This is his third year. So he would be a senior on this year's team. What is Lowry doing in the NBA? I might have to put Lowry Markkanen in the mix. DeAndre Ayton, for just the sheer man that he was as a freshman, can you imagine him as a senior next year?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy to think. So just the physical size and dominance that those two guys could have brought to the table, I think, would make it hard to not characterize those two as the best ever if they stayed 4 years.
Sure, you got those two. I still like my guy Bibby. I still and Gordon. And Gordon was fantastic. If he had that shot, I mean, there's so many guys. And you know what? And they still may not be better than Sean.
Still might not be the 2,500 point scorer and as good as what Sean was. That's what's nice about your listeners, I think, is they do have the history understanding of Arizona basketball. I never want to lose sight of that when I talk to some of the younger fans, is go back, watch what Sean Elliott was doing. It was amazing.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks.
Thank you. That was Ryan Hansen. We'll take a break here on 10:30 The Voice. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 10:30 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera. And now on the phone, we have Lamont Hundley, former U of A football player. Lamont. Where do we go?
Steve.
Where do we go from here on this football team?
Well, I think we just get out there and see where these next two games take us. And, as much as a Wildcat and much as a player and fan of this team, I mean, I don't want to say these guys are thrown in the tower, but hey, I mean, you got to compete. And you know, I think it was kind of pretty rough and out there. And there were some cases I saw guys not competing. And, if that's the case, man, you know, what do you do? I mean,
right.
What do you do?
Once you reach that point as a player or and you see it, mm-hmm. I don't know if you can recover. It's like, maybe mm-hmm. this is a bad analogy, but you know, you're married and you just kind of give up. Mm-hmm. You don't fix that stuff. You can go to counseling, but guess what? You don't want to really be there.
Exactly. It's very, you know, and it's harder when you're dealing with, you know, numbers as far as a big group, as far as a team. And, you know, when you're dealing with a smaller group, let's say a basketball team or whatever, you know, maybe you can get guys to buy in things. But once you get the nucleus or the majority of people buying into there's next season, you know, that can be the song around the locker room and when you're huddling up. And you can look in the guys' eyes and just see, are they here or not? And I think we'd have hit that plateau.
Right. And that's a difficult situation, especially because you have one of the best teams in the country coming in, and it's not a quick fix. You can't just, okay, this is not any of you coming in, and you can win and get some hope again.
Right, exactly. And like you say, you know, you just went up to Oregon and they did what they did against us and, you know, brought your balloon down as flat as can go. But mm-hmm. now you got the Utah coming in, the same basically look of the same type of team you just played up against, and you know, there was nothing there as far as being competitive. So imagine what's going to happen when you face Utah, one of the best running backs and the best quarterbacks is in the Pac-12. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the best defenses that you're going up against. So,
right.
You know, it's going to be hard. I mean, it's going to be hard for the coaches to even get these kids, you know, motivated to look towards, you know, this game and get them up for this game and get them, you know, in some kind of emotional excitement to come out and play against the youth.
Have you ever, I know your brother's been a coach and there's always hope that he'd be a coach here. Have you ever thought to be a coach?
I coached at one point. I coached high school football here in Tucson. I'm not saying that's the level of these guys mm-hmm, or mm-hmm. University of Arizona, but I did. I mean, I coached high school football. I used to coach at Florham Wells High School. And yeah. I was there for about 4 years and the decision of being a father came into play yeah. versus being a coach. And I realized that I have kids and I'm giving more time to someone else's kids versus my kids.
That
made me to make that decision and walk away from the game. But, you know, I love the game. I mean, I'm always loved the game because it's part of my DNA and it's you know, and it's quite easy being on this side expressing things about the game versus being in the shoes of some of these coaches too. So
yeah, no, and that's kind of where I wanted to go with it because mm-hmm. you can feel for the coaches and what's happening
yes.
because you know they're there and they're competitors. They want
right.
to play well,
right.
but then you also say, you know, what the heck? What's
yeah,
going on?
Exactly. Right, you know, it's just I mean, I would hope the coaches haven't gave up. I mean, that's the one thing. I mean, you got to, you know, pray and hope that they haven't given up. But who knows? I mean, maybe some of the coaches are in a situation where they're thinking, hell, do I have a job next year?
Mm-hmm.
Do I have a job in the next few months? You know, do I have to figure out some kind of way of, you know, get my name out there for opportunities that might come up? You know, so are you 100% into preparing these players versus having 75% preparing for your job coming in the next few months? You know, so that is a question. And right now, when they go out on the road recruiting and things like that, are they 100% into that? You know, again, are they 100%? Are they staying there at 11 o'clock or sleeping on the couches, mm-hmm. you know, watching the opponents and maybe finding something that's, you know, a little different than what you game plan for that can make a difference? I mean, are they doing these things? And only they would know because we're not between the walls.
So when you go to a game, I know you're a fan, you go to the games mm-hmm. and you watch. Do you, after wins, because you're a former player here at U of A, after wins, how do you feel? Give me that feeling going home with the wife, going to have dinner or whatever, and you just feel good. And then how is it after losses, even though you're not playing?
Well, I mean, naturally, if there's a win, which hasn't been many, especially right. home-wise, about to win. I mean, the pride. I mean, I feel proud, very proudful for my university and the kids that's playing and representing themselves as well as us. I mean, you know, by all means, that's the first thing that, you know, that comes out and feels strong towards me. And I feel great for the kids because of the fact that they got a W on the board. But when you get that L, I feel for them as well as I feel like crap.
Mm-hmm.
I personally feel like crap myself. Because the fact that I still feel like I'm attached to this university in a lot of ways. And so when they do lose, I mean, I feel that same pit in my belly that I'm sure that some of these kids are feeling in regards to that hateful, awful feeling of someone taking something away from you. You know, so I feel that way just as well on my way home and, you know, listening to the stats and things like that on the radio and some of the, you know, comments that's been taking place. And like I say, I, you know, the only way you fix that is the next day you
work
find
harder.
Out what,
yeah.
what took wrong, what happened, and you fix it and you work on it and you game plan, you know, to not do these problems. The other day, I mean, I was listening to Kevin talking about, you know, some of the things as far as fixing and looking at it and evaluating it. You know, it was one or two particular plays that took place in the game, and I can't throw it right at me right now, but he brought that, someone asked him that question, and his response was, you fix it by practicing. And, you know, and he, I guess there was a lot of comments in regards to communication, okay? Mm-hmm. In regards to communication, you know, how do you get these guys to communicate where there's not becomes a problem on the field because you're not communicating properly. And, you know, his answer is basically you practice, and you fix these things. But if you constantly doing the same problem over and over again, somebody's not practicing. Somebody's not practicing what is asked of them to practice to fix these issues and fix the, or, you know, is someone 100% into it or not? So, you know, so I my thing is, you know, I would hope and pray that these guys feel just as bad as me, and not only me, but other alumni too that played at this university, and feel bad when they're losing, because when you feel bad, you know, you want to, you know, prepare even harder to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Being a former athlete and me writing about it, writing about it a lot, one of the biggest things or fallacies, I think, is you lose a game and you hear people, well, we're going to learn from it. We're going to do this. And okay, it sounds good. But again, if you continue the same issues, what are you learning from it if it's not improved? And then again, if you're playing against guys that are just better than you, guess what? There's a lot of learning to do in getting better.
Exactly. And that's some things you can't overcome.
Exactly.
They are better than you and stuff like that. And, but you're right. I mean, I think that's a fallacy when people say you learn. And again, if you don't take your mistakes and improve on them, you're not learning.
You're not learning. You just
keep on making that same old dumb mistake, especially when it's a mental mistake. You know, mental mistakes and things like that, those things you can't teach kids. I mean, those things, the kid got to have it in him to be able to absorb that and know that I can't make these crazy mistakes like the offsides or the dumb, you know, personal foul penalty, things of that particular nature, or a busted cover because I'm in cover one or I'm in cover two, and because of the fact that I'm lined up on the wrong guy and guy runs down the field wide open, you know, you can't continue to do these same old mistakes over and over again because you're not 100% into the game.
Right. And I think that's on the players. That's definitely on the coaches.
Everybody.
It's everybody. And it's not a quick fix if that's what it is. Let me ask you, this is a naive question by me, and a pardon for, had you guys back in the day gone, you guys hadn't gone through something like this? Right?
No, sir.
What's the worst?
I never had a loss in season at Arizona, by the way.
What was the worst? Like maybe two games?
The worst season I had.
Well, yeah, this maybe back to back.
We was in a row or total. Our total was my first year was 7-5.
7-5.
I think my best year was 9-2. Remember back in those days, it was 7-4. I'm sorry, we only played 11 games. so we didn't have the luxury of 12 plus.
We have like
bowl games.
We have like 2.5 minutes. So what was the worst stretch if you can remember that?
Of losses
where you had maybe just that where you didn't know if you're going to get out of it and you guys got out of it.
No more than two back to back. No doubt in my mind. I think I can recall maybe two games back to back in regards to that. And again, I wasn't thinking that we can't get out of this mess. We put ourselves in this mess and we figure out a way of getting out of it. And the next opponent, you know, you prepare for that next opponent and you prepare to get a win.
Yeah, no question. How did you feel after like those two losses? Like the world was going to end?
The first loss make you feel like crap. Uh-huh. So imagine two losses. It's, you know, naturally it get worse and worse and worse. But again, I can't let that define me. I have to figure out some kind of way of getting out of this rut. And, you know, the coaching staff have, as well as, you know, the leadership on the team as far as actual, you know, the leaders of your team. I mean, my senior year, I was the team captain. I was the team captain of the whole team, but I was also the defensive captain. So it was my obligation to make sure these guys, you know, stay focused, and I took it upon myself. And I think it's important that you find these leaders that's on this squad, you know, and make these guys realize that, hey, do this for yourself. Be prideful for yourself, and prepare for the game that's coming up. And you know, be selfish and do it for yourself. And then you get love them doing selfishly things. Maybe it turns out to one complete defensive offensive team.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, Lamont, appreciate your time with me. Mm-hmm. Thanks for being a great sponsor at Arizona Health.
Yep. There you go.
We'll talk to you Monday. We'll see if this pull a miracle off.
Well, it shall be a miracle. And here I am. Man, I'm always, you know, optimistic about things. But you know, it's kind of hard to be that way now.
Right. Well, thanks again, Lamont. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, brother.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Well, thanks, Tom. We're gonna take it. We'll see you tomorrow here on 10:30 The Voice.